Welcome to DevCast, brought to you by Devrel Smith, the right people. DevCast is where property meets people, industry figures, news and views, what it takes to be your best. So sit back, earphones on, and enjoy this edition of DevCast.
Hi everybody and welcome to DevCast, an audio series presented by Devrel Smith. My name's Andrew Devrel Smith and I'm the founder and CEO of Devrel Smith. This episode I'm delighted to announce I'm joined by Director of Research in BNP Paribas Real Estate UK, Chair of the Urban Land Institute and active member of the Society for Property Researchers, Master of Food Science graduate, Vanessa Hale. Thanks ever so much for joining me.
Thanks, Andrew, for having me.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Well, I'm delighted you're here. You've got such an interesting story. And so I want to dive straight in and guess, what is a story pre-real estate?
A story pre-real estate. I am a non-traditional researcher in the real estate sphere. I spent my first, decade in the consumer market research world. So I have a food science degree and I have a hospitality and tourism management with a focus in real estate development. So it started to leak in there as the time went on, but I've definitely got a different background than the traditional people in property.
I'm glad to hear it. And long may that continue. Tell me more about so how do you think that hospitality and service kind of background, has that affected your thinking when entering the space? And what were your first impressions when you came to real estate?
Well,
honestly.
So I think for me, the takeaway that I had was I timed my getting my master's at possibly the worst time of the market, where no one was going to be doing development, and realized that I needed to get my foot in the door and understand real estate as a whole. So I took a role being a leasing administrator and worked as an investment coordinator. So I really kind of got the ground up feel for the real estate industry and probably saw and experienced everything that possibly you can see besides the world of development, which was quite exciting in some ways. It was really hard and vastly different than my degrees. I think that the ability to focus on the operation side hadn't really shown itself from my master's, that it's only kind of in the past 10 years that it's become relevant. And I think that is just because we've seen the move to more operational-led investments in the way that the industry is moving, I've seen more synergies. When I first entered, it didn't really have any application.
Okay, so then the question is, what was it? A smart lady, loads of degrees. You could have gone into any space. What was the attraction of real estate?
I loved travel. I didn't have a family that had a kind of real estate background, so I don't think I knew it as an industry to begin with. I loved architecture. Chicago is where I'm originally from is known as a great city for architecture. And I think it just kind of clicked. All of a sudden I had some great mentors along the way who kind of pushed it to me as something to consider, and I've been in it ever since.
Good. Well, I hope you stay forevermore. Now, maybe you could give me an impression. You've obviously transitioned across the pond, and you've come to join us, and we'll talk about that in more depth. But what would you say, just in terms of first impressions, what were the most immediate apparent differences? Because I'm doing the same thing in the other direction nowadays. What would you say are the most apparent differences between the U.S. real estate advisory business and the UK?
I think the two probably immediate differences that struck me when I moved here just under 9 years ago, actually, was A, how formal real estate is within the UK. I think I'm unique in the UK real estate market for not having a real estate background. In the US, that's you're more unique if you actually have a real estate degree, if that makes sense. The concepts of the university programs really haven't been there. I'd say that's probably has changed in the last decade, but at the time that I was in the, joining the industry, I had colleagues who were specialists and had degrees in literally biology to fine arts. The spectrum was really, really wide. So I think that was probably the one major difference that I realized when I moved here, thinking, it'd be very easy to get a job, and that reality very much becoming clear that actually the way the system works here is very different.
So we made life difficult for you to get in, did we?
Just a wee bit.
That's what I'm hearing.
but it really led to being able to have a lot of really interesting conversations. And again, it was, I definitely had the conversations of, well, should I go back and do another degree, which seemed a little bit excessive, or do I have the ability to have conversations and still offer what my knowledge and my background and skill set is in a different way? And I think because of the timing, the markets just were open to having a few people like me. And I say that because that probably lends itself to the second observation was, I think as a female in this industry, when I first entered into the UK markets, was quite surprised at the lack of diversity.
Really?
Yeah.
My goodness. That was a topic for later.
But those were the two. So we can come back to it.
Now that you've raised it, you think just that the diversity is a huge spectrum?
It is huge.
And you're better placed to talk about that than I, but just on the male-female balance, /mix, how different do you feel we are to our American?
I think it's getting better, but almost all of my colleagues when I was at CBRE, it was pretty much a 50-50 split in Chicago. It was vastly different moving to the UK markets.
Wow. Right.
It didn't come up in conversation. It wasn't something that was talked about, if that makes any sense, because it wasn't as obvious. There was other diversity challenges, don't get me wrong, but on a gender basis, it wasn't as stark of a difference.
Okay, so I'm going to hop around just a bit because I want to understand your job a bit better, because we met on a minibus.
We did.
I'm not sure if you have minibuses in the States, but we met in a minibus in Wales, and it was a lovely moment. And you explained your job to me, and it sounded genuinely. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and the way you described it to me, I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So can you just tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So my role within BNP Real Estate is really looking at what we call the insights and focusing on, I suppose, cross-sector trends. So something that might impact into the rural economy, which could roll over into the residential sphere, or something that's in the residential sphere that can roll into impacting on the commercial sphere. And I suppose the futurist bit of it is looking at some of those mega trends that can impact onto real estate, but looking maybe 5-10 years out. Sometimes I can get really scary and talk about some kind of really future 20-year type things, but that usually makes everyone go running for the hills.
Well, that's why you're here. let me hear some of it.
So, no, I mean, it's really interesting. I've been a big proponent of urban mobility and looking at the impact of drones. Obviously, I've been talking about it what feels like forever, but we had the highlights of it last year at Christmas with the airport. So you could start to see where the challenges are coming in and how we're going to deal with them, what the potential opportunities are, which I think haven't fully been explored. But obviously, we have a lot of regulation. And I think it was John Lewis who just came out and said that they wouldn't be selling drones any longer. So to the consumer market. So I think it's really interesting how we as consumers are responding to it, but actually how are we as a real estate industry responding to it? We haven't really even kind of scraped the surface.
Okay. So I have three children, 10, 7, and 4. I'm going home to see my 10-year-old tonight. What does the built environment look like when he is entering the workplace at 21? Well, the differences.
I think it will be different. I think we are continuing to see the move towards flexibility and multiple purposes. I mean, walking even into your office building, you have a variety of different uses in this building, just from my observation today. And I think that will continue with the aid of technology and the way that data is being collected. There will be a huge, I think, movement to I suppose, selling our own personal data rather than it being just put out for free. I think that we as the built environment experts will more than likely figure out how to use that to the benefit of society, and that more of our cities and more of our buildings will be 24/7. They may be offices for a certain period of the day, but once the office period is done, it may become a cultural center. It could become a bar. There's lots of different variables that I think come into play. And at the moment, we're not using building space in the best use.
Yeah. Does that mean less building then? If a building is 24 hours versus, I guess it's like a jet aeroplane that's kind of in the sky 20 out of 24 hours. If a building's in use 24 hours, are we building less?
I don't know if we're going to be building less, and I'm sure my rural colleagues will hate me for saying this, but we continue to see the drive to urbanization, and the reality is I don't see a reason that that's going to go away. So I think we're going to continue to have more and more people coming into the cities, and therefore we won't be able to kind of restrict the amount of buildings, if that makes sense. Yes. We're still going to have quite a high supply that we'll need to be servicing because that demand will be there.
Okay, so I just cashed in my sole bank account, and I have £10,000 to invest in the US and UK market. What should I buy? What asset? What's the one that you're laughing at me? Okay, you can add the noughts, but no, what's the one? Where do I invest my hard earned money?
I think if you can identify a building in which has that ability to become flexible. At the moment, if it's a warehouse, we've seen the growth of last mile logistics. I don't see us as consumers changing our online shopping habits. I think that will just continue to grow. So there's a nice autonomy to that. But I think looking at how that area may grow. So I think that we will start to see logistics and last mile being combined with makers places, with potentially with some residential. So I think there's a lot of variation that's coming in those particular. So I'd probably be leaning towards one of those last mile logistics type locations.
Okay, so if I add a couple of noughts,
yeah,
you can look after me. That's what I'm hearing. You just touched on it, residential. In North America, commonly known as multifamily from an investment asset class. Yeah. What do you see, again, you know, what can you just give me a summary of what you see on both sides of the pond, what we can learn from our North American friends, and again, looking into your crystal ball, yeah, what does the residential landscape look like 5 years from now?
I think I was, to be very honest, quite shocked when I did move to the UK and there was not a multifamily market really in the same level of what it is in the US. I was a strong proponent of helping to build the PRS, build to rent market here in the UK. I think it needed to happen. I think this next step or the next phase that the UK hasn't quite seen yet, but you definitely have seen it in the US pretty much since the GFC, is single family rental in a build to rent operated style. And I think that there's a huge opportunity for that, especially as we know we've got some pretty serious affordability challenges when it comes to home ownership in this country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with you more. And what can we learn from our French friends? What's the landscape over in Northern Europe?
I think one of the really interesting thing that some of my French colleagues are working on is some more sustainable development methods, especially when it comes to housing, and some smart tech that, again, we're really not fully embracing. Really? Yet. And I think those are two areas that perhaps the continent are a little ahead of us on.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's quite exciting to see. We've got some really great examples that are being built currently in Paris that are pretty high tech, and it is more than just, oh, you've left your kettle on. It's, you know, being able to.
And this is a green drive, is it?
It's energy efficient. It's really kind of embracing, I suppose, that element of technology there to assist you in making a more sustainable lifestyle.
And if I this is dangerous one, this, where, what's the date today? 23rd of October, 2019. Nobody quite knows, I think, where we are on Brexit. But But how does working for a French-owned organisation, can you, how does that feel at the moment in the midst of a political kind of scenario I don't think anybody of our generation has felt before? What's...
To be honest, it's not actually crossed my mind. I think we've had more chat around the rugby than we have in relation to politics. It really isn't something I think that comes up in a conversation or has it been, you know, I think if anything, it's been perhaps a disappointment for all of us, as I think we all look at it, each other as being a global organization. You know, you hope that the world wants to move in that direction. And if anything else, it's disappointment that that's not the direction that everybody perhaps sees, and what those positive benefits can be. But I also think that that lends itself to, I've got some great colleagues who have spent time living abroad and, you know, I guess suppose as a transplant to the UK, you know, that there's only probably a certain amount of individuals who have had that experience. And once you've had that, I don't think it's something that necessarily you want, I don't say taken away, but it's not something that you take for granted either.
Right. That's enough politics.
Okay. Yeah.
We're going to move on. you're not only extremely successful and prominent researcher, but you wear another hat, right?
I do.
Can you tell me, hats, I think. Tell me about those.
I've recently been appointed the chair for the Urban Land Institute for the UK. For those that don't know, the Urban Land Institute is a multidiscipline global organization. It's nonprofit. It's really focused on education and best practice of and use of land. So it's focusing on how we can make places better and build better communities and learning from each other. I think the beauty of it as a researcher, the Society for Property Researchers, which I'm involved in here in the UK, didn't exist in the US. So it was a really natural place for a research person in the real estate sphere to go, because you were able to have conversations with someone in the investment world, someone in the developing world, you know, doing development, to an architect, to someone that's, you know, I had conversations this morning with the launch of our Urban Art Forum research, looking at landscape architects and how does culture and urban art fit into the wider sphere of the development world? And should we be talking about it at the front of the cycle? Should we be talking about it when we're finishing the project? And how, you know, how music plays a part in that, and how art actually can make a place feel better. And really, I think, you know, one of the big buzzwords now is, you know, the health and well-being of whether it's an office occupier or whether it's someone, you know, buying into a flat, is that they want to be happy with where they've gone and where they're going. So it's quite exciting. It's a very, very, very broad organization.
Right. We're going to keep talking about it, but to my dumb brain, I'm a recruitment guy, right? So you have to forgive me. But my observation when I'm stateside is just, you know, from a real estate perspective, for me, one of the fundamental differences between UK and US is just land, right? There is just, When I'm out in our Texas office, there's just endless amounts of land, whereas clearly we're a little bit restricted by a bunch of seas. So, how does the ULI operate differently here? I guess to there, based on the fact that I guess the number one challenge or the reason for your being is the conditions are quite different, are they not? And I know stateside, like it's held in a very, very high regard. Not to say that it isn't here, but when I'm out there talking to younger professionals in real estate, they're very proud to be members of the ULI.
Yeah. They drank the Kool-Aid. No, that's the phrase we use in the States. I think, yes, you are 100% correct. The US has some, doesn't have the same challenges that we do here in the UK, or to be honest, most of Europe. And we probably align closer to some of our Asian colleagues when it comes to the landmass issues. I think what's interesting is that the focus on cities and being able to use land to the best of its ability brings its own sets of challenges, whether it's the impact of climate change, whether it's affordability. Those conversations are happening globally, and it's okay, how have they handled it? And if nothing else, it's not necessarily here's the best practice and this works, and so therefore you should replicate it exactly as it is. It helps to widen the conversation so that you can go, well, that's a really interesting approach that we hadn't considered, and there might be some synergies that we need to think about. And that, I think, is where the kind of beauty of ULI comes in to its really its strong suit.
And what is your specific role as chairperson?
Yeah.
What is your role? What does that involve? Because you've got a pretty meaty job to sort of worry about. What's the ULI gig, commitment and expectations?
It's ULI UK is just over 1,100 members. We're the largest actual national council within the European context. And my role is to represent all of the members. So I'm the member's voice to the European Executive Committee, which helps to make decisions as to what big pieces of research content we focus on, helping to promote some of the really great things that we do, like Urban Plan or our mentoring program, being out talking to people like you and raising the profile of ULI. And I suppose in an element of transparency, you know, creating that ability for people to realize that it's not, you know, this weird organization that's cult-like. It's actually, there's lots of different things and that you can get involved and engage with. You know, having been at our launch this morning for our urban arts research, the interesting thing was the amount of new individuals from different backgrounds who have come into the conversation, and it's still talking about the built environment, and it's still talking about development. It's coming at it from a different angle, and not kidding, had great conversation with a landscape architect, and we were talking about things, and it was, you know, how we put the benches in the right places, but we make them not look like benches so that we don't have issues around homelessness, and, you know, and how we manage that is really, you know, but making it also part of kind of the art and the layout of the space. It's things like that that I think are probably the unique bits that I like about what I do as the role for chair.
They pay you lots of money.
It's an unpaid position. Oh my. It's fully voluntary, which is why it's always amazing when people say that, and I'm like, it is a passion. It's a passion you have.
I guess it's not about being a young real estate professional, but if, you know, why would somebody sign up? You know, and what are the expectations around that? What's the cost to doing so?
We have tiers of membership. You can start as a young leader, which is how I started. When I was actually in grad school, I started as a young leader, which means you're under the age of 35. There actually is a student membership, and then there's a young leader membership, and it gives you an opportunity to engage, to be honest, with potentially some quite senior individuals in the industry. I think from the UK standpoint, our real USP is twofold for the young leaders. Is we have a mentoring program. It's a year-long program where you are set up with a group and a very senior individual in the industry, and you get some really proper dedicated time from them. We've been doing it for 6 years, and it's quite a rewarding thing. There's no extra cost involved with it. It's just your membership and putting in your application. And we have a great group of young leaders who coordinate it all. And it's all done on a volunteer basis. So you can kind of get as involved or not as involved as you want. The second thing that we also do is what we call lunch and learns, where you get to have a 10 to 15 people with a senior person and ask all sorts of questions that, you know, in a public forum will A, probably never be answered, B, never asked. but you then, you know, if you're in the next category, you're usually in that kind of 35 to 45 age bracket. And that's really...
Why are you looking at me like that?
It's the area where you can look at, I suppose, professionals who are probably more in middle management and looking for understanding their leadership potential and kind of skills and transitions to leadership that you may not have access to in your day job. And then we have our full members, I think, is probably the creme de la creme. It's the top of the pile. It's where you really can engage in product councils, which are small forums that are very Chatham House, and some conversations that happen in those type of meetings are pretty impressive. And the groups of individuals that are in those product councils are quite aspirational. We're not quite at the US level, if I want to do a comparison, where we have multiple flights, which means that we have multiple small groups that have still the same topic of conversation. But I hope one day that maybe that will happen.
Yeah, look, I'm sure it will. I'm hearing about ULI more and more and more, and I've seen the benefit firsthand from people who've signed up and you know, super committed to the body. Now, you mentioned something that I really want to talk to you about, which is urban plan.
Urban plan is part of the ULI, and it is an education piece, and it's an education tool in twofold. It's going into state schools for 16 to 18 year olds typically. So they're right around that A-level period of their life. And it's a board game, and it's a computer module. And each classroom gets broken up into teams. And one person becomes the developer, and one person's the financial controller, and one's the creative architect and marketing. And the beauty of it is A, they have a challenge to redevelop a site as part of this board game. And they have all the challenges that a regular developer would have. They have housing affordability requirements. They've got a skate park that they need to work around. They have a historic church. There's a retail building that has, you know, significant relevance to the community, and therefore you can't really knock it down. And they have to build what they're intending to build whilst trying to hit all these targets. And then they have to, the beauty of it is we as industry professionals get to go in and help guide them throughout the day and volunteer our time and spend, you know, interacting with the children. But then we act as the local authority, and they have to present their development. And the great thing is that we then pick a winning team from that class. And at the end of the school year, it's usually in June, all of the winning teams get invited down to the GLA, and they get to go into the London Living Room, and we have a big celebration. We get to bring in some pretty neat sponsors and speakers. And I think it's the first step at trying to educate those who may not have the awareness of the real estate industry as a sector to consider. And that's, for me, kind of goes to then that second thing of it's looking at how we widen the conversation and change the perhaps reputation or lack of reputation that our industry has. And second to that, I think it helps with our diversity over the long haul. But it's a slow and steady process. We've only been running it for 5 years in the UK.
Really?
And we do 40 schools a year. So we've hit about 4,000 students so far. And we've gone across the UK. I did get asked the question once if we've been down to Plymouth. I don't think we've gone that far, but we've gone outside of London. We've been up in Scotland. We've been in Wales. We've been through the Midlands. We really have tried to brush out as many different, you know, schools as possible. And it does become part of, it aligns with the students' curriculum, which I think it's not a wasted day for the kids. It's a pretty fulfilling experience.
That just sounds so cool. I didn't know you were doing that. And also, I'm wondering, like, have you sat in a room and witnessed a 16-year-old come out with an idea that, you know, some of our esteemed colleagues being paid vast sums of money haven't considered? Have you seen that in
absolutely in I mean time? some of the students have come up with some absolutely insane ideas, and then you kind of go, actually, that kind of does work. Or it's always really entertaining when you see that light bulb moment where all of a sudden you hear them talking about, you know, something in their neighborhood that they just didn't think about before. And that in itself, I think, is just an awareness that you just can't really pay for. It's really quite an exciting part of what I think ULI is about from the education standpoint.
Well, I mean, I just want to go on record and say if there's anything we as a business can do to help that bridge from sort of an interest to a first step on the ladder, then, you know, you have my absolute commitment.
Thank you for that. Sure I will follow up with you on this.
No pressure. Right, diversity, you touched on that. We're all talking about it. What does it mean to you?
You know, for me, diversity is not just on gender. I do think there's a cultural piece. I think I probably have to say that as an American being in the UK. But it's age, which I think hasn't been on the agenda, but is coming, especially as we know as a nation, we have an aging population and people are living longer and wanting to work longer. But there's going to be some questions, I think, coming around that, which is interesting because now we're at 5 generations in the workplace, which has, I don't believe, ever happened.
Explain 5 generations in the workplace.
5 generations in the workplace now, which is pretty scary when you think about it. But it's, you know, you could look at it as the positive beauty of health and technology and vibrancy. But what does that actually mean for us going forward? So I think that's something that's going to be coming down the agenda,
yeah.
Which we haven't really started talking about. And obviously there's ethnicity, there is mental and physical disability. There's so many different layers of diversity. It's kind of, it is, as you said, the most, sometimes the most obvious is the gender conversation, but there's so many more layers to diversity. I think the fact that we're having the awareness and starting to have the conversation is the right first step. I'm not certain we have all the right solutions yet in place.
What's the right second step, Vanessa? Come on.
It is the second step is having these types of conversations. And I think it is things like urban plan. It's about outreach. It's going outside of the real estate bubble and letting people know all the good things that our industry does, which I think, rightly or wrongly, we don't necessarily always get the credit for.
Okay, cool. So hopefully there's 150,000 people going to listen to this, and I presume they all have friends, family, children, cousins, networks. Sell real estate to me. Why would we want to work in the real estate sector?
It's fun. It's people. I mean, we all need a place to live. We all, in theory, need somewhere to go to work. And I think we all want to do that in a pleasant environment, whatever guise that is. And I guess for me, I look at it and go, there's so many different facets to it. If you want to be really, really super creative, you know, you can consider being an architect or
a designer,
or if you're, you know, more into the analytic side of it, you know, you can be an analyst. You can, especially with the rate of technology and how that's getting implemented into the built environment, albeit some people would say probably quite slowly. I think it is continuing to adapt. And so if you're in the tech space, there's huge opportunities. If you just like, I guess, making a bit of cash. We aren't necessarily, you know, an underpaid industry. So I think it has a lot of opportunities for lots of different interests. And that's what I think real estate as a very big place to explore. And I think sometimes it's just not considered.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but I'm with you. For me, it's just about it's a people business, you know. It's still a people business, and doing what I do, there's no purer sort of way to engage with people than probably in my version of life. And so you fascinate me, right? I have no idea how old you are. This is not my attempt at finding out, but you're a very successful lady, and you're unique. You know, you've travelled, I don't know how many thousand miles, five to 7,000 miles, I'm guessing. Yeah, to come here, you're chairwoman of the ULI. You're incredibly successful at BNP. You've transitioned industry to industry. How's that happened? What do you think? You know, what's inside you to have the conviction to make those calls?
I have a tenacious appetite to learn. I do find that this industry is ever changing, and I think that is quite exciting. I don't like to do anything repetitive. So I think the excitement of the industry always being in constant change mode is exciting to me. I probably, like you, I resonate to people. And whilst real estate, for the most parts, can be bricks and mortar or land, which are quite stable assets, the reality is that I do still think it is a people business. And you can have some amazing conversations and relationships that I did not experience outside of the real estate industry. I think some of my best friends are from this industry. I suppose the thing that really also motivates me is there's so many opportunities, and I suppose, naively, I don't know. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be the president of the US. I think that probably says something about me as a child.
I've got this feeling. I can see it happening.
So I think it just naturally, I have a wider view of the world, and I want to make places better and inspire people to make places better.
Okay, so I want to ask you another question, which is biggest career mistake. We've all made them. And you're an inspiration to so many younger people. They're looking at you thinking, wow, this lady's perfect. But you must have made a mistake or two along the way.
I was going to say, you have to have made a few mistakes. I think probably my biggest mistake was not finding the industry earlier. I think that's probably why I am so passionate about urban plan. I think... rightly or wrongly, my advisors that I had when I was in high school really stuck to very traditional paths that real estate wasn't even a conversation.
That's so interesting, because I think one of our challenges here in the UK is real estate is a traditional path. And yet, you know, I'm kind of quite vocal about, you know, let's get the non-traditional types in, you know, the rebels or the entrepreneurs or, people that are perhaps less conformist, but actually, you know, they bring a whole new dimension to the sector. And we're starting to see that happen. And interestingly, when you study some of the senior leaders right across the market, they've reached these top jobs by not conforming to the traditional path. I think you're an example of that. So I've placed my bet at Ladbrokes, next president of the US or next CEO of BNP or whatever may come next. And I guess that's my question is, so you're a third of the way into your career, I reckon, guesstimates.
A little bit more, but that's okay.
I think you're a third. So what... can you talk me through, you know, you're clearly very passionate about what you do. How would you like to leave this sector? You know, what's on the to-do list?
What's on the to-do list? That's a big one. I genuinely would love to be able to, I think one day actually, probably be really involved in an actual development, just because if that's what I, you know, got my degree partially in, I'd like to do one at one point, and I've not done that, so I think that'd be quite exciting. I think I'd like to say that I strongly helped change the profile of those that are in the industry and encourage the reputation of our industry to be better than it is.
Yeah. Well, you've already done it, as far as I'm concerned. But
thank you.
You'll continue to do so. Talent, my world, our gig, I suppose, Devril Smith. What could we do? Do you think to improve, you know, the capability or the standards of the marketplace? What's your tip for me and us as a business?
I think. Your point that you brought up earlier, that actually going outside of the box and looking for those rebels or looking for those that have the skill set but may not have the qualifications. I think there's still quite a lot of work to do for the UK as a whole on the apprenticeships program. I think it has great potential. But having talked to some that have gone through the process, it's extremely painful. And I think we need to collectively as an industry make that a little bit better, because I think, to my point on diversity, is diversity of thought will help us to have a better outcome in the end. So I think it is looking at not having a tick list of, oh, do they have this qualification, that qualification, where did they go to university, et cetera, but actually talking to the people, because as a people business with the ability to have the right skill sets and having different skill sets, I think we can end up with a better place.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's probably my top tip on diversity as well. If we remove biases, resumes, a lot of that stuff, and actually, you know, take people on face value, then I think we'd look very different quite quickly. Now, very busy lady. I'm grateful that you're here and I'm conscious of time. But and on that front, downtime, what do you do? You know, life's full of balance, right? Or should be.
Should be.
So downtime for you looks like what?
my spare time, and those that that know me quite well, I'm a spectathlete. My husband is also in this industry, is also very athletically involved in Ironmans and triathlons and marathons. So I do tend to take my photography skills, which is probably my biggest passion, and I will apply it to the sporting arena. So that spends quite a bit of my time. And when I'm not doing that, it's eating, cooking, enjoying life with friends and family.
Back to where you began. Yeah. Right. If it's cool, before we round up, what I'm going to do is speed round. We do this with all of our guests, and I've got a few questions for you.
All right, fire away.
Right, you got to be quick. Dark Knight or the Joker?
Ooh, Joker.
Thin and crispy or deep pan?
I'm from Chicago, so I should say deep pan, but I'm going thin and crispy.
Oh, my goodness. Whoa, I can't believe this. US or UK?
Oh, my parents, UK.
Bowie or the Beatles?
Beatles.
Peanut butter or jelly?
Both. You have to have a PB&J.
Okay, and the final one we ask is to all of our guests. If you could own any building in the world, which one would it be and why?
So I think I'm going to go for something slightly bizarre, and I think it has to do with history and being somewhere in which it's not a specific building as much as it's Bletchley Park. I think that being kind of the foundation of our computer and technology and what has come from that, I don't know exactly what I do with it or anything along those lines, but I think it has a really special place, and I don't think it necessarily always gets the first mention.
That is a good answer. Vanessa Hale, you've been brilliant. I can't thank you enough.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
I wish you all the best with your career. Keep up the good work, and whatever we can do to help, just give me a call. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
You can join the DS movement by visiting ds.devrilsmith.com, and you will receive the latest DevCast episode direct to your inbox.